Welcome to you all. We've still got one more person to come, but I can just get started on the little introduction. So we're on the fourth class of Easy Habits for Happiness. Positive habits to cultivate that will naturally result in us being happier, kinder, calmer human beings, having much more energy, being able to really contribute to the world now, to be able to refrain from creating more havoc and harm than there already is, and with a really long-term goal of flourishing as a human being and as a society. So this course is part of the balancing emotions area, and so it's based on Buddhist psychology, but you don't have to be a Buddhist or even religious for it to resonate, because it's, you know, human psychology, it's universal. It's not based on belief or dogma, but as the modern term for it now is, evidence-based. So let's have a look what we've covered so far, and then we can get into the class. So just a really quick review of how far we've already got. So we've had a look how cultivating happiness and peace is what we have to do. We can't just wait around for it or hope that it will somehow randomly happen to us. It's actually something that we can cultivate within us. And so this is the benefit of not waiting for it to happen to us or trying to get our peace and happiness or sense of well-being from outside of us, from circumstances. We can create those circumstances within us and carry that well-being wherever we go. We've also had a look at the cycle of negative habits, how they develop and how they can be dismantled. And the really nice analogy that we use is how our mind is naturally clear and luminous, but it's filled with clouds and toxic pollution of the afflictive emotions, disturbing states of mind. So just like the clouds and the pollution doesn't break the sky, it's not one with the sky, even though it's very entwined, it can be removed. And what we've seen with the coronavirus, you know, over China and all the pollution, it just took a few days, maybe a week or two, and the pollution dispersed. So that can give us a lot of hope for our inner pollution, that we can remove all of those toxic mind states by dismantling them so that they no longer arise anymore. So that's how we looked at positive habits and negative habits and the whole cycle, and how we can whittle away at it from all different angles. And we just have to get started. And the moment we do, we experience the benefits of that. And then it gives us the courage and the impetus to keep on going. And last week we looked at the four opponent powers, the method to purify mistakes and negativity. So it's the practice of winding back those negative habits, because it's not just the theory, we have to actually go through an experience. So just think for a moment if you can remember what those four opponent powers are. And that's the hint, they're the four R's, if you can remember them. If you were here last week, there was the meditation to do of the purification, applying the four opponent powers. So the four R's, the four opponent powers, see if you can remember. The first one, regret. So not guilt, but genuine regret or remorse. The second one, reliance. Reliance on your refuge, your, you know, the Buddha, Guru Vajrasattva, a higher power, God, Jesus, the universal law of cause and effect, whatever it is, whether we're Buddhist, Christian, agnostic, or even a materialist, we have a refuge or a reliance that is bigger than us, a universal principle. Remedy, that's the third one. And remember, it's not a punishment. And it has to have an equal strength to the negativity. And the last one, resolve or restraint, where we make a promise to not do that activity for a certain amount of time. So we'll go through those four opponent powers again today so that you get familiar with them. Also, last week was the meditation to be able to do it. So if you're not familiar with the meditation, hopefully we'll have a chance today to do the meditation at the end of the class so that you get a really nice experience about how it all works. Did anyone have any questions or reflections or comments that came from the reflection sheets from last week? If you did, please put them in the chat. I'll be able to see it flashing up there. There were, where are they? There were also some things to fill in, I think, some questions. Were they from last week? Let's have a look. Maybe not. There were habits, the questions on the habits in the worksheets. Hopefully that means that you've been doing them. Because remember, that's my guarantee that if you do the worksheets, if you do the reflection sheets, guaranteed you'll experience the benefit. You will change. You'll be a changed person by the end of the week, by the end of the course for sure. So if there are no questions, you know, number one, you've got to be able to find where the chat is down the bottom there. But you can put a question there anytime during the class and it'll flash and I'll be able to get to it and read it. So don't be shy. Put them down. So today's topic, how the mind creates everything, mind creates all. Here's the quote from the Buddha. We are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts. With our thoughts, we make the world. So this is saying how our mind is the source of everything. All of our experiences are shaped and flavored by the mind. We think that our experiences come from outside of us, but how we even experience that, what we see, how we interpret things, how we instinctually respond, it all comes from our mind. All of our mental activity, what we dwell on, the kind of baggage that we carry, what we give our attention to, either a positive, negative way, either pushing it away or going towards it, it all strengthens. And depending on where our mind is going and what we're focusing on, then it'll culminate in action and how we communicate and in what we do. So all of our physical activities, how we express ourselves, what we do, how we treat our body is determined by our mind, our attitudes. How we communicate is determined by our mind and our attitudes and what's going on, even if we're unaware of it, what's going on in the background. So the mind creates it all. And how we express ourselves and how we act actually determines what kind of person we are, what person we become. It shapes our personality and our character. So in a way, the body and speech are servants of the mind. And this means that if we try to change our negative habit patterns or deconstruct them, if we try and just change our speech patterns or just change our physical behavior, just try and suppress an addiction or a compulsion without changing our mind, then the changes won't last. even if we make progress, it's we'll put all that effort into making the progress, but it won't last. We'll fall off the wagon again, or we'll kind of burn out. We'll have that initial burst and then we fall off. You know, just like all those countless get fit programs or go on a diet programs or whatever it is, we do have an initial burst of energy, but why don't they last? And they don't last because we're not dealing with the source, the mind. So the beginning part of how to change our mind means just becoming aware of what's happening within our mind without freaking out, without being judgmental about it, just as Lama Yeshe says, checking up. Becoming aware of what's going on as if we were our own inner reporter. And we have, as His Holiness the Dalai Lama says, innate human intelligence. So we can use our innate human intelligence. We already have that. To become aware and then slowly train to respond in a way more beneficial way. So as we've been going through, now we'll start going through the actions of body, speech and mind, the habits of body, speech and mind, and that's why we're starting with mind, because mind is the creator of all. So to set our motivation for this morning, two questions. What mental attitudes do you want to stop? So whatever destructive mental habits, attitudes, instinctual responses, feelings. So that's on the negative side of things. We might know what it is that causes us the most trouble. And then what inner qualities would you like to develop? So we have to have the positive, the thing to look forward to as well. So what kind of personality traits or virtuous qualities or strengths would you like to develop that you see in others and you really admire? So with those two questions in mind, let's just do a short reflection. Take a nice deep breath in through the nose, out through the mouth. Settle your body, especially let your shoulders and neck relax. If they're tight, squish your shoulders up to your earlobes and then let them drop. Do it again, squish them up to the earlobes and let them drop. Imagine a fine thread of light running from the base of your spine up through your body, out the crown of your head, so that your posture naturally extends. The weight of your body is supported from your crown. Bring your focus to the breath. Just let your attention be on the breath without following anything else, without getting distracted by anything else. Doesn't matter if a distraction arises, that's okay. The thing is to not chase after it. To just continuously bring your focus just back to the breath. And just saying, breathing in, breathing out. And as you are breathing, you might notice that there are particular types of distractions. It might be a feeling tone. It might be an inner chatter in the mind. Or it might just be distractions from coming in from the senses. So whatever it is, just notice and name. Notice what type of distraction is arising, let it arise and let it fall away, all in the same movement, the same momentum. As a distraction arises, notice, name it, and let it go. So just like in martial arts, where you use the momentum of the attacker to disable the attacker. So we use the momentum of our distractions to notice, this type of distraction, that type of distraction, and then let it go and bring the focus back to the breath. If it's a particular type of feeling, notice the feeling tone, breathe into it. If it has a texture, how you feel it in the body, and then let it go. You're not reducible to any one feeling. The feeling is not you. And if it's lots of thought or chatter, recognize that's the inner environment. Without getting involved, just naturally let it settle. Just like leaves naturally settle once the wind has stopped. So as those inner clouds begin to part, we have some internal spaciousness. We become aware of the spaciousness of our mind. And from this, think about the mental attitudes that you have that you know are destructive, that you want to stop. Those habits that dominate you, the destructive attitudes and emotions. And also what inner qualities you'd like to develop. Try and think of one or two, name them. And then keep them in mind as we go through the class so that we can make it directly relevant to our life. And then also extend your motivation so that by we ourselves working on our mind, we can become a better human being, a happier human being, and that will change the world. That will help everyone around us. It will help our community. We'll be able to create peace and harmony. So think that we're doing this not just for ourselves, but actually for the benefit of all living beings. Then take a deep breath in through the nose, out through the mouth. And let's set the scene for today. So this Australian saying, how to keep yourself nice, which is basically a way of saying, how do we do ethics in our day-to-day life? So ethics are a little bit different from morality in that morality can often be seen as something that's kind of imposed from outside, whereas ethics are universal values. And the practice of ethics within Buddhism isn't just an idea or a code of conduct that we believe in, but it actually comes from an insight about how the mind works and how we are interdependent with everybody, not just humans, but all living beings and with the planet. And because there is this connectedness, everything that we do affects not just ourselves, but affects others. And because of that, we have a responsibility for others. So recognizing this interdependence, actually seeing how things work in reality means that ethics arise naturally from that. They're not just an added extra, they're actually a response to reality. So a natural universal ethical system of how to live harmoniously together. And then out of that comes all the practices, the religion, the ritual, the self-help techniques, all of that comes from this kind of universal basis. So based on recognizing our interdependence, and the Buddhist system starts with something really simple, the three doors or the three ways that we interact with our body, speech, and mind. And so instead of having a list of hard and fast rules, what we've got, we can think of suggestions of how to navigate through the windy road of life and keep ourselves safe, keep ourselves nice, not harm anybody else, and even contribute to the benefit of others. So think of them as like road signs. So the road signs aren't a matter of dogma, are they? They're about a matter of safety, and they're really good suggestions. And if we stick to the road signs, then we're going to be safe, even if the road is difficult. The thing about ethics is that it recognises that it's for the benefit of everybody, not just those that we like, those that are close to us, but because everybody has feelings, then everybody matters. So the practice of ethics isn't just about, it's not like a double standard, it's really universal, and it's based on equanimity, recognising that we're all the same, because in that we all have feelings and we all want to be happy and not suffer. Now, with avoiding the negativities and then practicing their opposite, the virtues, there's an order. First, we've got to stop doing the negativity, and then we can start practicing the positive aspect of it. Because otherwise, it's kind of like going, say, for instance, being a junkie, being addicted to some kind of drug and going, I really got to get healthy. So you just take lots and lots of vitamins. We've got to stop putting the poison in and then start taking the vitamins. Otherwise, we just put more poison in and more vitamins, and we make very little progress at all. I also like the idea of these street signs, because it's kind of like we're drunk drivers, aren't we? We're drunk under the influence of the disturbing emotions. As we're going through our life, we're dominated by our afflictive states of mind, our disturbing emotions, our hopes, our fears, our baggage, all of that. We are driving under the influence. So to stop putting the negativities in, so we're not a drunk driver anymore, and to then really pay attention to these suggestions of how to live our life well to benefit ourselves and others. So that we don't just, you know, crash and harm ourselves or others, which so often happens, actually, literally, and also emotionally. So let's cut to the chase, to the main one, the mind. And what we can do is look at the what are called the mental non-virtuous actions. So as I've already mentioned, the body and speech are servants of the mind, and that's why we have to start on the mind. If we just change our physical habits and not our mind, any progress we make won't last. Mental actions. It's a bit tricky to kind of think of them as an action at first, but what it is, it's an activity of the mind. And it's when we dwell on something, strengthen it, act on, and then end up acting on it. The term rumination, where we're chewing on something, or when we're winding ourselves up. So we can tell, in the olden days we used to call it like a cracked record. It's going around like a cracked record. We can tell that those mental actions have come to their fruition when we actually act on them. So we might be stewing about something for a long time, but we manage to put in the antidotes and we don't act on them. So it's not a full action then. But the more that we dwell on things, the more they become a habit. They create their own momentum. And then it's very tricky to stop it. So that kind of activity, that action, has a huge effect. Now, there are a countless number of them, but there are three main ones that are the worst. So if we start dealing with them, then all of their subsidiary branches will also be able to cut them off as well. They've got quite old-fashioned, archaic-sounding names: covetousness, ill will or malice, and mistaken views or distorted views and attitudes. So covetousness, that craving and wanting and having that as an activity of our mind. Ill will or malice, revenge, resentment, there's a whole spectrum in there. And mistaken views, distorted views, they can be prejudices, they can be attitudes, but also fears, where it's mistaken. Mistaken meaning out of step with reality. Because it's out of step with reality, it harms us, it creates suffering. So they're the three main ones recognized by the Buddha to get started on. But what I thought I'd do, just to kind of break the ice a bit and bring it into our day-to-day life, let's have a look just generally, some destructive mental habits, and then, just so we don't get too depressed, some positive ones. So the destructive ones, let's see if you recognize any of these and if these are things that, you know, we ourselves do. Do we experience nervousness as a habit or worry as a habit? Anxiety, and it's less upsetting form, just restlessness. So in the coronavirus lockdown, we might have been experiencing restlessness by now, isn't it? And it's usually when our normal entertainments are taken away from us, then we become aware of the inner restlessness that is with us. And that inner restlessness, if it just keeps on growing, can turn into worry and then anxiety. Or we have a mental habit of depression. So there is a cycle that happens. It can happen quite quickly, where we're triggered by something and then boom, down we go, depressed, no energy. We may have high expectations and perfectionism and then self-defeatism. Also, part of this is avoiding the important aspects of your life, just having it nagging there in the background, but just hoping that if you ignore it, it'll go away by itself. And boy, doesn't that sap our energy. We may have mental habits of flying into a rage, and then that kind of cold rage that plots revenge, or the hot rage of just violent fantasies of how we want them to suffer. And it may solidify into all sorts of prejudices, biases, bigotry. We may be a bit obsessive compulsive, overthink things, have that analytical attitude, but it runs away with us and now it becomes overthinking, and then we get panicked and then we get agitated and it becomes a distraction. So there is the kernel of wisdom in there of having a very sharp, astute way of picking things up, but it's dominating us and it's driven by a whole lot of fears and worries and distorted attitudes. Mental habits also just confused to what's right and wrong. What do I do here? Whoa, I don't know. What do I do? And it's close cousin, that kind of shifting morality that happens of, you know, it's all fun until it happens to me. And then, whoa, our morality now, suddenly that's no good anymore. A little bit of double standards creep in. And then just general dissatisfaction, always being dissatisfied. You know, when we had to go to work all the time, when we had a job, when we were busy, 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 it was like, oh, God, I'm just so busy, I just want a break. And now we have a break, an enforced break, and it's like, oh, I just want to get out and do things and see my friends. So actually, wherever we are, we're dissatisfied. That's a habit. All right. So do you recognize any of these? Do you have any of these? Is there anyone that particularly stands out? Perhaps it's all of them. I know I relate to all of them. So it's good to recognize them as habits, not as you. To be able to just put a little bit of distance like that. Now let's look at some positive ones and we can see, well, do we do any of the positive ones? Yeah, good. Okay, so you've recognized them. Anxiety, that's a real big one. Anxiety comes from so many of these habits. You know, it's anxiety is not even a thing. It's a habit, a momentum. And yet there are positive habits that we can cultivate, but whether we do or not, because it takes a bit of effort, we really cut ourselves short of so much happiness. So here's some positive mental habits or attitudes that can help us. Yes. So Stephen, on an overcast day, restlessness and worry, they're all familiar. Yeah, so a lot of things like that, external things, can trigger us. And why do they trigger the negative things instead of an overcast day now feeling all cozy and comfortable? An overcast day, we get depressed. Or if there's lots of agitation or noise or wind around us, then we get agitated inside. So why are the destructive mental habits triggered? And it's because we're just more familiar with them. We can become familiar with the positive ones, but it takes effort. Just initially, like when you get on a bike, the first few pedals take effort and then you have the momentum. So the same with positive activities. So a lot of them are cliched, and it's okay that they're cliched because cliches actually come from universal truths. These one-liners, they're very easy to remember in an emergency. We can't remember a great big complicated paragraph. We need a one-liner. It's important. So I embrace the cliches. Walk a mile in their shoes. It's a great one. And there's actually a march in Sydney that they have where all the guys put on high heels and walk a mile in high heels. Boy, is that an eye-opener, you know? A lot more than just reading a book, just doing that and your whole appreciation of what women go through changes. So putting ourselves in someone else's shoes, it naturally, we develop some empathy, don't we? So having that habit, when you see someone doing something and you go, whoa, a bit judgmental, and then immediately your positive mental habit comes in and goes, ah, but if I was in their shoes, perhaps I'd even react worse than they are. So that can become a habit of tolerance. Here's another nice one, there for the grace of God go I. So it's a Christian saying, but it can have its Buddhist component as well. You know, there but for my fortunate karma go I, my fortunate circumstances. If my circumstances were different, I would be different. Looking for the silver lining. The silver lining in the cloud, the opportunity in any situation, it's always there. All successful entrepreneurs, businessmen, businesswomen know this. Instead of collapsing when everything goes wrong. They look for the opportunity in there because it's always there. We can have a mental habit when things go wrong, instead of going, oh no, go, how fascinating. So I might have told this story to some of you before, but this wonderful documentary I saw years ago about a conductor, Benjamin Zander, and he held masterclass summer camps for all of these incredibly talented young musicians. And even though they, you know, so many of them were prodigies, they still were riven with doubts and anxieties. And his attitude was so infectiously positive. So when they'd come together as an orchestra and practice, they'd go through the bits and whatever, and he'd go, da, 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 stop, stop, stop. What do we say when we make a mistake? And he had them all trained in unison. The whole orchestra goes, how fascinating. It just stuck in my mind. So it just takes a little bit, training in words. When something goes wrong, don't say, oh no, say how fascinating. And when things break, don't say, oh no, say, of course. So I was so lucky when I was little growing up, my mother loved antique crockery, beautiful, exquisite bone china, antique Chinese, Japanese cups. You could see all the patterns in colour through them. She was a very good op shopper, so she got lots of these from the op shop, so they mightn't have been the full set. The cup and the saucer may not have matched, but everything was exquisitely beautiful, and she just used them. So our whole day-to-day crockery was antiques. Our biscuit dish was antique, everything. And her whole thing was to use them. That's what they're for, not to hold on to them, keep them in the cupboard and never, ever use them. And she kind of understood that, you know, the natural end state of any bone china antique cup is to be smashed. It's going to be smashed one day. That's natural. It's not an aberration. So why, when it smashes, do we go, oh no? We just go, ah, now's the time it's going to happen. So we actually have a biscuit dish at Lungri Tungpa Centre that's an antique. It's like 120 years old. We just put it on the table every day, or we did until we closed. And I'm just waiting for the day that it smashes, and then I can say, of course. Here's another one. In the argument, give them the victory, rather than, you know, winning the argument at the expense of the relationship. So that's in Geshe Langri Tungpa's 8 verses. But it's also in a great ABC show called The Agony of Relationships. So there's all the agony of life and the agony of teenagerhood and the agony of school and the agony of Christmas. And this one, The Agony of Relationships. So I can't remember which great Australian comedian was kind of fessing up and just saying, what I've learned is, it's better to keep your relationship and just give them the victory. Don't get all head up on trying to win the argument, because you'll lose your relationship. It's a great TV show. You should check it out. Pay It Forward. Now that's a movie as well, isn't it? And it's a fantastic attitude. When something good happens to you, determine to pay it forward, to keep that momentum going. So wonderful. And it actually means that our whole heart and experience opens and gets more vibrant. We don't lose anything by paying it forward. Celebrating milestones. This too is so important, because many times the only things that we remember in our life are the traumas. So to remember the good things, we have to mark them in some way. I think maybe in the olden days, people used to have a 21st birthday or a sweet 16 or a debutante ball, or you leave school and you get a car or something. They're much more traditional milestones. And now everything's kind of a bit diffused. So we have to really make our own milestones and put some effort into it. We can take something from tradition, from any tradition, or we can make up our own. And there is even a website where you can go and they can make up a ritual for you. So you tell them the event, who it is, how you want, you know, the kind of things that you like, and they put it together into a ritual and send it off. So however we do it, it's really important to have the good things marked by some kind of ceremony or celebration so that they stick in our memory as much as the traumas. Otherwise, of course, we're going to look back at our life and go, oh, it's a mess. And the last one, gratitude. Gratitude meaning feeling lucky, joyousness, looking at how lucky we are. So in the coronavirus times, yes, we might be in lockdown. Yes, we might have lost our job. We may be suffering incredible uncertainty, but how fortunate are we that we're in Australia? I wouldn't want to be anywhere else in the world at the moment. I feel incredible gratitude for our social safety net, for the relative cooperation of our states and our government and our politicians. Australia pretty much is the safest place to be in the world at the moment. So that puts the whole rest of my life into perspective. Yeah, there's been some difficulties, but in the big picture, oh, wow, I'm so lucky. So all of this, Corey Jackson calls these positive mental habits good mental hygiene. So any questions or comments about this before we go on to the three main ones, the negative ones and what to avoid? This is kind of like the general overview. Many of these will fall into those three main categories that we'll look at of the three non-virtues of the mind and then the three virtuous actions of the mind. So I like a good list. Buddhism has lots of lists. It's very handy. We can come back to them. We kind of hold on to them like a life raft. So let's have a look at covetousness. So trying to avoid covetousness. So what is covetousness and how do we know if we've got it? So the symptom, how we know we have covetousness as an attitude, mental habit, is if our personality is dominated by desire. That old song, I can't get no satisfaction. So we just don't have contentment. We're never content, no matter what happens. We can't find satisfaction. And even if we get good stuff, it just seems that whatever we have breaks, wears out, degenerates. It just turns out no good very, very quickly. And we also know we have covetousness often when we end up acting on it and then get caught. So we have an affair, we commit fraud, we overspend on lay-bys or whatever and financially extend ourselves. So we end up acting on it and then that's an indication that we had this mental activity of covetousness going along in the background and we just weren't aware of it. So I find starting at the symptom, like working, seeing the external expression of this and then working backwards, coming back within to see what led to that. And we don't have to be judgmental. We just notice, oh, look, I do all of those things. That happens to me. Boy, that means I've got covetousness. No wonder I'm distressed. So the first thing, what to abandon, what to not do anymore. To abandon desire. So we've got to see the faults of this kind of constant gnawing desire and craving. To recognize that the object out there isn't the source of our happiness and contentment. So abandon that thought. Abandon the thought that that thing brings me happiness. Because even if we get that thing, if we don't have that contented state of mind, that thing will then appear to just degenerate in front of our eyes. So we actually have to abandon attachment itself, which is a biggie, and there's a whole other course about how to do that. But one of the things is to how to do that is to become aware of our sense of dissatisfaction and recognize that as attachment manifesting. That restlessness, that's attachment manifesting. So instead of just trying to grasp after whatever and get rid of that feeling of restlessness, using mindfulness to become aware, wow, I'm really restless, I'm bored, I'm agitated, I'm dissatisfied, there's attachment manifesting. And recognize it for what it is. And then instead of just grasping after that thing again and again and again, like the sushi train of life, to remember those deeper states of happiness, what actually brings us satisfaction, connecting with others, helping others, sharing our things, that brings a much deeper, long-lasting sense of contentment and satisfaction and warmth in our heart. And just stop thinking about other people's wealth. You know that thought, I just want what they have. We just got to stop thinking like that, focusing on what everybody else has and I don't, because that'll always be there, so that'll always make us unhappy. We just got to put a stop to it. What we can do instead is think, someone else is happy with less than I have now. It's a good antidote, that one. Someone else is happy with less than what I have now. So what to practice instead? They're the things to abandon. Now what to practice? Actually rejoicing at the fortune of others. So when other people have what we want, feeling happy for them. Well, at least someone has it. So one time when I was in a stopover in Singapore and I had a few hours to kill, so I found myself wandering around this mall, and it was a mall just outside of a casino. So all of the display windows weren't just your ordinary $2 shops and things. They were Tiffany's windows and Rolex watches and diamonds and all sorts of things. It was pretty intense. This corridor with all of these window displays of wealth and riches, and they were gobsmackingly beautiful, a lot of them. And it was great because they were thousands of dollars. There's no way I could have even had an inkling, oh, I want that. And so I was just able to enjoy them and look at them and go, wow, isn't that beautiful? Look at the sparkles. So I had a genuine thought, well, you know, I hope whoever gets them enjoys them because they're beautiful. At least somebody's going to enjoy them. And I could enjoy them without wanting them because it was completely out of my league. So I was free of that. I was free of that craving and covetousness. It was great. So rejoicing, it just makes you happy without having to spend any money. Practice being content. Contentment is a practice. It's an activity. Using our mindfulness to notice this kind of cycle that happens, and instead of getting down on ourselves, just going, aha, I caught you. I saw it. See it in action. What to practice instead is recognizing that object out there is not the source of my happiness. It may be the condition for my happiness, but if I don't have the inner source of happiness, if I don't have that inner experience of contentment in my heart, doesn't matter what I get, it's not going to do it for me. And remembering those deepest states of happiness. And the result. If we can manage to do this, the result is basically whatever you do, you'll accomplish easily. You'll accomplish whatever you wish for, it will come easily. How amazing is that? So many times we push, 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 push. We get tighter and tighter and things just go wrong all the time. But if we can change this mental attitude, our whole experience will become whatever we do, we'll easily accomplish. So the bumper sticker for this one, we've got a bumper sticker for each one, is what I have is good enough. It's quite powerful. So if you put it on a piece of paper and stick it on the fridge or above your bathroom mirror for the coming week, what I have is good enough. It's great. It just takes the pressure off because it mightn't be perfect what we have. And of course, external things will never be perfect, but it's good enough. It's very skillful because we're not going head on at it, going, no, you cannot have blah, 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 which just makes it tighter and more intense. We just take the pressure off by going, yeah, it's good enough. Okay, so I had no idea just how much I do this, grasping for things, not necessarily material, but others' happiness or connections. That's right. Oh, I'm so glad, Christine, that you spotted it. It's amazing, isn't it? Just recognizing it happening is liberating because now it doesn't have that grip on us so much. It is fantastic. And, I mean, I have to remind myself all the time. Each time it happens, I forget, I get sucked in, and then I have to remind myself. And it is liberating to be able to see that. It also takes the pressure off others because if we recognize that, you know, half the story is our restlessness and neediness, and the other half of the story is, you know, we do need human connection, but we stop putting so much pressure onto the others or so many expectations that then when we do have some connection, say over Zoom, you know, it's not the best, but we can still really enjoy it. So it's good enough. Whereas if we get this tight, 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 then it'll never be good enough. Name it and tame it. Oh, yes, Stephen, that's your theme, isn't it? Name and tame, another bumper sticker. Absolutely. And actually, I think that one is really relevant for the next slide that we've got it. So I'm just going to write it down. So the next bumper sticker, avoiding ill will. So this one, name it and tame it. That'll be part of the practice, our new habit of training with the words. All right, so how do we know if we have ill will? Oh, you know, ill will, malice. We might think that we're not very mean, but if we've ever found ourselves dominated by thoughts of revenge fantasies, it may not be something really dramatic like killing somebody, but it might be revenge fantasies in that if you've had an argument with somebody and then in your mind you replay everything you wish you had have said. That's kind of a revenge fantasy. It's motivated by ill will. It's not motivated by wishing to enhance communication. So malice and ill will can be quite addictive and pleasant, just like attachment when it first arises. We like feeling it, but it has a very toxic effect. One of the effects, how we know we have malice or ill will, we may not be aware of it, but if we often find ourselves without help, we find ourselves alienated, alone, and no one's helping us. That's because in our mind, we've got ill will and malice. I mean, this is really sad. We find ourselves surrounded by conflict and fear and aggression. We live in a world of chaos, of fear of being attacked. There's a predominance of hostility either from others or from ourselves, us towards others. Or we might even just like hurting others. You know, sometimes we get into a state if we have an argument and we just really like, we just say that thing and it hits the mark and we got them and they're hurt and it feels good. Okay, so that's all the practice or the habit of ill will, of malice. Now, what happens also a symptom of ill will is that we lose all of our logic and reasoning. We cannot figure out what the consequences are going to be. And so we do things that later on we may really regret or we cannot undo. We ruin relationships. We make catastrophic decisions. It can end up in domestic abuse and violence, murder, suicides, bullying. So they're all symptoms of ill will, this attitude of ill will. Now, this one of finding ourselves without help or living with conflict and fear around us, often we think it's everybody else's fault, but actually it is the world mirroring back to us. So it's kind of like if we have a terrible mood and we go out into the world with this cross face and this aggressive mood, everybody else just instinctually will mirror that back to us. They're not going to naturally smile at us. They're just going to back at us. So our hostility gets reinforced and our hatred and aggression gets mirrored back to us. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so then, of course, we respond like that even more. So it leaves no room for any kindness. But the real trap with this one is thinking it's everybody out there who's hostile and aggressive. But actually, we've in some way elicited it. So the symptoms of that might be a bit of a rude wake-up call. It probably doesn't happen all the time. But if you find this is your experience, there is a way that we can change it by changing our own mind, because changing out there is very, very difficult. So what to abandon? What to kind of practice the restraint to be a bit disciplined about is abandon thoughts of harming. So when you notice yourself having a revenge fantasy, notice, what is it? Name it and tame it. That's the time. Because the more we indulge in that, the more it'll strengthen and run away with us. And then it's going to be very likely that we will act on it. And this is why we have so much domestic abuse and violence in our culture, because it comes from going around and around and around in the mind. Then the natural thing is to act on it. If we don't have any other way of dealing with conflict or difficulty except by stewing on it. So how to give ourselves an incentive to stop thoughts of harming when it's so addictive is to recognize how those thoughts harm me, they harm us. When we have those destructive thoughts, those thoughts of hatred and malice, it harms us, number one. It may or may not harm them, it always harms us. Physically, our immune system goes to pieces, we get high blood pressure, the heart disease, It's so much more likely that all of the other disturbing emotions arise. We can't enjoy our food. We can't enjoy movies. We can't enjoy relationships. The harm it does us is incredible. So the thing here is to recognize that there is a bit of an addictive allure to malice and ill will, just like there is with attachment and covetousness. So to become aware of that. So what to practice instead? The opposite. Practicing the opposite. Cultivating love and compassion for others. And how you can do that naturally is just by finding, instead of everything that you disagree with, that you hate about them, you find the things you have in common. And at first we might go, nope, I do not have anything in common with them, but we always do. So if you've ever been overseas in a country where they don't speak English, for instance, it takes a lot of energy, doesn't it? And then if you come across an English speaker, wow, it's like, hello. Now, if you had met them in Brisbane, you may have had zero in common with them. You might not have wanted to speak to them at all. But the fact that you're meeting overseas and they're the one other person that speaks English, immediately there's just warmth, open-heartedness, you become best buddies, you know, for that time that you're overseas. So what we have in common, it's a changeable thing. It really changes in the context, doesn't it? If we're all on a bus and everybody in the bus doesn't particularly like each other, say we're on a tour, the tour goes out in the outback and then the bus blows a tire and now we're stuck in the outback together. Now suddenly we care about each other. Regardless of whether we personally get on or not, doesn't matter. Here we are all stuck in a life and death situation. We rely on each other. We feel for each other. So what we have in common changes with the circumstances. And so we can do this in our mind. We can recognize, I can either look at everybody here in the supermarket and go, I hate them all, or I can look at all of them and go, we're all in this together. So the effect of either of those on our heart, it's profound, isn't it? Another thing to practice, recognizing their fear, their vulnerability. And of course, we can't really do that unless we can recognize our own. And yes, the person may be destructive. They may be acting very badly. They may be doing things even that, you know, they should be locked up for. But it's never a reason to hate them. You hate the behavior, not the person. And that's another one that we've got to keep remembering again and again. It's the behavior, not the person. And if we can't feel a sense of care towards that person, if we can't get through that negative behavior, you can at least think at one time they were a vulnerable two-year-old, unhappy, scared, brutalized, and relate to that. That'll melt our ill will away. So if we manage to do all of that, if that's what we manage to practice, what happens? The result, we have fearlessness. We have natural confidence. Not just the happy-go-lucky confidence, but we can actually read people well. We can tell if they're a dangerous person to be around or not, because we're not pushed around by our prejudices or our fears. And we can still have care and concern for them while keeping a safe distance. And we'll have natural confidence with, you know, people that instead of just being shy, we'll be open-hearted. We'll like being with people. We won't be intimidated. So it's a kind of confidence that comes from being based on reality. It's an unshakable confidence. And isn't that something that we all want? We want to feel fearless and confident, and this is how to go about it, to minimize our ill will and malice and cultivate love. Who'd have thought? So the bumper sticker, just like me, they too want to be happy. So we recognize, I want to be happy. Everybody with feelings wants to be happy. Every living being have feelings. They want to be happy. That's a fundamental, it's a universal truth. So we've got to preface it with just like me. So that on this very basic level, we are putting ourselves in the same basket as the other, where normally we'd separate them out, because the moment we separate someone out from us, then it doesn't matter what we do to them. So we've got to say, just like me, Trump wants to be happy. Just like me, the domestic abuser wants to be happy. So I am not a domestic abuser, but I want to be happy just like them, and they have no idea how to go about it. So that way, while you have the just like me, that's that cultivating a genuine love that's not based on whether they treat you nicely or not, but based on recognizing they're a living being, they matter. And Stephen's one, name it and tame it, that's the one of how to, you know, recognize the symptom and abandon it. All right, next one, avoiding mistaken views. Mistaken views, wrong views. This is a tricky one, and it's quite a specific thing within Buddhism, because there are particular views that create all of our suffering. Mistaken assumptions, projections, afflicted states of mind, and they are the source of every other disturbing emotion and unhappiness. And they're difficult to recognize, of course, because we're clouded by it. So how do we know we've got mistaken views? How can we tell? If we're, number one, dominated by confusion, if we're completely confused about how to live our life, as the saying goes, how do we do adulting? It's part of having mistaken views, of not knowing. Or if we're easily discombobulated and confused. That's one symptom. Another symptom is if we have fundamentalist views, if we're very rigid, this is right and this is wrong, and we cut off a whole section of society. Or on the other end of the spectrum, if we find ourselves cynical, jaded, bored, kind of flatlining, not caring, which is totally different from non-attachment. It's just that kind of cynicism or boredom is a low-level symptom of having mistaken views before they've actually caused us any overt trouble. And another symptom is if we feel isolated, alone, with no protection. So who'd have thought that's a result of mistaken views? But that comes from thinking that we are autonomous, independent, and forgetting we are interconnected with everybody. We are connected with everyone. How on earth could we feel alone and isolated? It's a complete mistake. And yet we do, because we misunderstand our own nature, and we misunderstand how we are in the world affects the world, whether we know it or not. And we misunderstand about all the benefits that we get from others. Continuously, We don't even see it. The fact that we have a society and roads and houses and sewerage and water on tap is from the kindness and efforts of others. And we continuously benefit from that. How can we feel alone? So what to abandon? Feelings of indifference. Feeling indifferent to others, it's a bit tricky to spot it because generally if someone isn't in our face annoying us or isn't alluring and we want them, we don't even notice they're there. So that indifference to others, that's a low-level form of ignorance and mistaken views because we're unaware of our interconnectedness. And it's another thing amazing with coronavirus, isn't it? That now suddenly everybody else, what everybody does matters. Whether everybody stays home, whether they social distance, it all has an effect on us, whether we know them or not. So that can kind of raise this feeling. So instead of feeling indifferent towards others, now everybody matters. Yeah, it might matter with self-interest, but they matter just like we matter to them. What we do affects others. And to abandon prejudice and partiality or bias. So that's how we sort the world out to people that help us, people that harm us, and that way we decide whether we like them or not. So someone that might harm us might actually be helping somebody else. It's kind of like politics, isn't it? You just vote for whoever's going to help you in your circumstances. And the other people in their other circumstances, well, they can just look after themselves. Very rarely do we vote for what's going to be best for our whole community, even if it's at our own expense. So kind of abandoning feelings of prejudice, partiality, bias. That also includes fears of the other, of difference, of different cultures, or of being of black or white or old or young. So what to practice? Well, this is a big one. So I think we've got to just whittle away at the edges. And one of the ways that's really easy to do is just inquire after others. Inquire how they are. How are you going? What have you been doing? What have you been reading any books in the lockdown? What's your favorite binge TV show at the moment? Who do you miss the most? Just all of those things to inquire how people are. And the answers are always surprising. Become curious. Question things. Not kind of aggressively, but just encouraging your sense of curiosity. So that's kind of nice. Then just a real basic one, respecting civic rules, values. So our society, you know, we have various laws and things to protect people. So we have the no drink driving rule. That's a good one. It's a good one to respect, to not think that I'll be the one to be able to get away with it. And now with the coronavirus lockdown, the civic rules of to respect, if we go to a supermarket or shopping center, 1.5 meters apart from everybody, respect those rules. Then embracing other cultures, just getting to know or to lessen our fear about the other, one great way is to just start cooking food from other cultures. So we've got a huge plethora of cooking shows on telly about this. SBS has heaps of them. And it's great. It really just breaks down barriers immediately. Or if you have a community garden, you don't even have to speak the same language. And learning new skills. Learn the accordion, learn how to crochet, learn how to do yoga on Zoom, all sorts of things. So those kind of hobbies, you learn a lot more than just the hobby. It's almost like it's an excuse for connection with others, for having that kind of, you know, if you ask someone, how do I do this crochet stitch? It's almost like a pretext for connection, because whilst you're learning this new crochet stitch, someone is helping you. Someone's sharing, someone's spending some time, and not directly in your face, but kind of just sideways. And that's what we need as human beings. We need the practice of connection. So it's a lot more. In a way, it doesn't really even matter what you learn, because it's the whole communication that comes along with it that's so beneficial. So that's, I mean, there's a huge one, mistaken views. And they go from intellectual ones, prejudices, racism, ageism, all of those things, all the way down to instinctual responses. So we really got to whittle away at all the levels with that one. But if we get started, the result is that whatever you study and whatever you put effort into will expand your heart and mind. So you'll have a wider understanding and appreciation of the world. You'll feel more connected to others, not less. So this is a really good litmus test in a way, because I have had friends that have gone to uni and studied, say, feminism, and learned a lot about the subjugation of women throughout the ages, and come out of that university course bitter, cynical, very smart, very educated, able to quote all sorts of things, able to spot it everywhere, and kind of hating men and hating women, what to do. So just studying itself is not enough. We have to make sure that what we learn, all the self-help books that we read, especially if you're intelligent, that it doesn't just boost your intelligence, but it also opens your heart, makes you a better person, makes you a happier, more open-hearted person. And so to make sure that happens is by this avoiding mistaken views and really working on that. You know, this kind of natural humility can come in there when we recognize that we're all the same in these fundamental ways. So the bumper sticker, how things appear is not how they are. So the appearances and how things really are quite different. So when someone appears aggressive and angry, that's how they appear, but it's not actually who they are. Because just think about yourself. When you're aggressive and angry, how you feel is upset. But that's not how you appear. When you think of, say, a brutalized guard dog, they appear terrifying. But to the guard dog, they are terrified. So how things appear is not how they are. So just remembering that means that we don't rush to judgment. We don't have that impatience, but that kind of comes out as intolerance. We have that natural curiosity to find out what's the backstory here. We take our own emotions with a pinch of salt. so that when anxiety or worry or any of those disturbing things that we talked about before, when they start coming up, we recognize them. Oh, here it is. It's telling me this whole big, terrible story about the world, but it's not true. It's the habit, but it's not true. So, some take-home points about the mind. Here's the quote that we started with: all that we are is a result of all that we've thought. So one of the things, don't believe everything you think, you're not your brain. And don't believe everything you feel, feelings are not facts. So it just takes the pressure off. And there's no absolute right or wrong, absolute way the situation is like this or is like that. It will change depending on the context. Just like how we feel about our job changed before coronavirus and after coronavirus. So what we can do is take that very profound truth and apply it and go, it's going to depend on the context. So what's the biggest, best context I can put in there? So that's the thing to remember. There is no really. What determines it is what we bring to the situation, what's flavoring our mind or clouding our mind. So are there any questions before we do our meditation? Anything at all? We're going to do a meditation using the four opponent powers, and in particular to purify those negative habits and mind states, the ones from the mind, especially covetousness, ill will, and distorted views. No questions? Well, to do the meditation, you've got to think of one of those negative habits to purify. You can't just generically go, I wish I was a better person. You've got to think about what's a negative mental habit that you recognize in yourself that just runs away with you. Anxiety, worry, depression, revenge, dissatisfaction, restlessness, all of those things, you know, the symptoms, those habits that have their own momentum. So think of those. Let's do this meditation. It's just quite short. The mantra is up there. I lead the meditation with Shakyamuni Buddha here in the space in front of you. But if you're not comfortable with that, just think of just like what Shakyamuni Buddha represents, which is all the goodness, the kindness, the wisdom, the unlimited energy manifesting as the Buddha. But it can manifest as a radiant ball of light in front of you, all loving, all knowing. It's nice to be able to personify this. Even if you're a materialist and you just ascribe to external cause and effect, think of that whole energy of the universe and kind of concentrated there in the front of you as a ball of light, a ball of energy. Or if you're comfortable with Shakyamuni Buddha, radiant, golden, smiling at you, really happy you're here, seeing you exactly as you are, accepting you totally, recognizing all of your potentials that you don't even recognize. And feel the limitless compassion and unbounded wisdom of Shakyamuni Buddha, radiating light in all directions. So allow your heart to open and relax and to ask the Buddha, please help me, please guide me. Also think that we're doing this meditation, it's not just for us, but it's for everybody else just like us, undergoing the same problems, the same fears. We're doing it for our people. That if we do this practice and we can purify our mind, we'll be able to directly help them and indirectly help the whole world. So with your heart opening and relaxing, think of those negative habit patterns, especially the ones to do with the mind, especially those activities of covetousness, of ill will, of distorted views, and let a feeling of regret arise in your mind. Recognize the harm it does you, the harm it does others. Don't push it away or minimize it. Really feel it for what it is, how toxic. Feel that the Buddha recognizes this, and spontaneously, from his heart, a stream of blissful white light flows across space and flows down through the crown of your head, washing through you like a blissful waterfall, cleansing all of those negative emotions and mind states from your heart, washing your heart clean. Taya ta om mune mune ma munaya swaha. Taya ta om mune mune maha 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 munaya swaha. Feel your body crystal clear, clean, sparkling and radiant. And your mind light, completely free of negativity. What a relief. And from this state of clarity, make a promise to the Buddha that you're going to refrain from those negative mental activities for a specific amount of time. So be realistic. For the easy ones, maybe a month or a year. For the more difficult ones, maybe a week or a day or even just half an hour or even 10 minutes. Make that promise in front of the Buddha. And also make a determination what you're going to do to counterbalance the negativity, a positive action that's going to benefit yourself and others, and something that you also enjoy, something you can do in this coming week it can be just really general, like committing to reading an hour of a Dharma book every day, or an hour of Dalai Lama YouTube teachings every day for 1 week, or volunteering somewhere, or writing a journal. Something you can do this week that has an equal balance. Any of those wonderful cliches, the pay it forward, the gratitude journal. To think that you're making the promise to Shakyamuni Buddha in person. And he's very pleased with your commitment. And this time, golden light streams from Shakyamuni Buddha's heart across space, through the crown of your head, filling up your clean, clear body and blessing you with all of his strength and inspiration, all of the enlightened qualities, everything that you need to be able to fulfill your promise, to be able to bring forth all of your good characteristics, unlimited energy and kindness and wisdom and memory and knowledge. This golden light filling you up from the tips of your toes all the way to the crown of your head. Taya ta om mune mune maha munaya soha. 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 So notice how different you feel, nearly cleaned and purified, energized. Notice how you'll be acting and speaking and thinking differently in the coming week. And the Buddha there in front of you, or this radiant ball of light, slowly gets smaller and brighter. Gently comes across space to the crown of your head and then melts down through the crown of your head, slowly through your body, coming to rest at your heart, incredibly radiant. Your limited sense of who you are dissolves in that radiance and you become one with the Buddha's blissful, omniscient mind. Recognizing that radiance as your nature. And then dedicating all of the positive energy from this meditation and from the whole class to being able to remember your promise, your commitments, to restrain from the negativity, to be able to bring about peace and safety around you, and ultimately to be able to benefit all living beings in the best way. So then take a nice deep breath in through the nose, out through the mouth. So just as a little summary, what we've looked at today, if we want to change our behavior and our negative habit patterns, we've got to start with the mind. And if we want to experience happiness, we've got to start with the mind. The biggest things to avoid, like these road signs, avoiding covetousness, ill will, and distorted views. And then, you know, all the rest are kind of associated with those. And to notice emotional sensations and mental attitudes, to notice them, notice and name, and recognize they're not you. You're not your brain, you're not your feelings. They're valid, but they're not necessarily true. And the homework, so there's the, in the worksheets there, the purification sheet on the mind, what to avoid and what to do instead, for how long, just like we did in the meditation, but you can fill it in. And do the purifying meditation each night so that you get a really nice experience. And next week we're going to look at speech patterns. So how we communicate with others, the main things to avoid, and how to you know, make our speech pleasant and beneficial, but also the internal speech patterns, our internal dialogue, that constant kind of critique that we have going on inside our mind, the tone of voice that we have, so that subtle internal dialogue, how to make that a positive one, rather than one that, you know, totally widens and destroys us. So that's the main thing for next week, is the speech. So thank you so much.